Greetings, you're listening to St. Paul's Unseen Dimension. My name is Tom, and today is Sunday, April 24th, and the year is 2022. You have to excuse me, I'm having a thing where I'm trying to get things set up, and I've been dealing with an eye problem all day. I got some kind of thing in it. And the worst part about it is I've tried eye drops and combing my eyelashes, you name it, and I just will not relent. Anyway, it's been a day. It's been a very dumb day with just dumb stuff, and I'm still working on sorting out the soundproofing on the room downstairs, so that way my podcast won't be interrupted by animals or the outside world. It's like right now I'm hearing a car or some kind of vehicle in the background, and as much as I love having ambient sounds and whatnot to give my podcast that lived-in feel, there's just so many morons right now. It's like 11:53, and some dude's driving out there in his little, you know, foreign-made, you know, car with the loud muffler. You've seen them, you know, those street racer, you know, Fast and Furious types. They're driving like a freaking Honda, and they're just like, come on, please, just stop. I don't know if this guy's just driving around the block or what. Anyway, how's your weekend been? Good? That's awesome. Mine was full of all kinds of dumb stuff. But so I thought I would kind of do a best of worst of show where I discuss some of the things that just kind of tickled me today, and yet at the same time I'll touch on the things that are probably the saddest, most ridiculous human tragedies I've ever seen. But this actually here, this one article that I'm going to talk about right now, this actually happened right here in Minnesota, and I was really just tickled to death that it did. And it you know, there's a thing about animals, and if you've listened to the show, you know I'm an animal person. I'm a big fan of animals. I've always been, always will be. A three-legged dog with cancer jumps into the river to save a baby otter in Minnesota. And when I read this, I'm like, oh my God, this is the stuff this is a Disney movie right here. Gus the Golden Doodle hadn't swam since he lost a leg to cancer. Six-year-old dog owners weren't certain he would ever swim again after getting his leg amputated in February. But on Sunday, April 17th, the dog jumped into a Minnesota river and came out with a baby otter. And they have a video of the baby otter, and it's just adorable. He's got a little, you know, he's got a little bottle in his mouth and everything. Gus had a tumor removed during a follow-up earlier this year. Then the staff at the University of Minnesota found another tumor and amputated one of his back legs. Oh, this is going to be so sad. He's not going to be able to run again like he used to, but this hasn't slowed him down at all. Gus and his family were spending Easter Sunday out near the St. Croix River. I know where this is. He swam out at least 50 feet from shore. The family was shocked that Gus was swimming just as well as he did before the amputation, but they were more shocked when he emerged from the water. First time swimming with three legs, he comes out of the water with a baby otter in his mouth, Ella Hammerstrand, the granddaughter of Gus's owner, told Fox 9. Gus dropped the otter at their feet, and they immediately washed the sand off of it and rushed it to a nearby wildlife rehabilitation center. Gus rescued the baby otter, according to the Wildlife Rehab Center of Minnesota. The tiny river otter was too young to be in the water. Oh, man. It's just... that just really gets to me, you know. The compassion animals have for other animals. It should still be in the den with its mom, the rehab center said. Having no idea where the den is or how far the little guy had traveled, the otter had been admitted for rehabilitation. Wildlife officials were concerned for the first 36 hours they were caring for the otter. He was too cold to touch, and they didn't know if he was fighting off of a form of pneumonia. The otter turned the corner on the other day, and he's doing well. Kudos to Gus and his wonderful owners, Cleo and John, for saving this young otter's life. Wow. I mean, that's kind of like a wonderful little story to tell your kids. You know, it's like sometimes animals have a hell of a way of showing a lot of compassion. But what's really interesting about dogs in particular is that dogs have this. We have a relationship. Human beings and dogs have always had this relationship since the first wolves and the first other animals started to start following us around and getting fed from, you know, the scraps from our tables and stuff. That's domestication. And so anyway, what ended up happening was dogs and humans developed some kind of bond. But I would say, though, in the last 100 years or so, maybe longer, dogs have had this intrinsic belief that we were problem solvers. And it's like when a dog shows up, you know, and they've got something in its mouth, like, let's say, an otter or whatever. They're trying to get you to fix it, you know, to save it. Because they know you can. You know, they can't, but they know you can, or you can at least try, you know. And that's the one thing about dogs, is that they do depend on us to a degree for a certain level of, you know, I guess, comfort and reassurance that the world will, you know, continue to go accordingly, I guess. But yeah, that article really just kind of floored me. Mostly because I'm a big fan of dogs and otters and anything that's cute, you know. Tarantulas, not so much. Scorpions, oh fuck no. But, you know, the four-legged kind of animals are usually pretty cool. Opossums, not so much. They're kind of ugly. I'm sure that on some planets, opossums are like, you know, chihuahuas or something. They're really cute and all that stuff and well-received, but no. Raccoons, they're okay. I don't know where I was going with this. But anyway, the start of the show, I thought I would start off with something really kind of fun and kind of cute because, you know, after all, these are the stories that, you know, you don't see enough of them on the news, you know? Anyway, so I don't know if you've noticed this, but apparently there's a... Holy cow. There's this part of me, and it's a pretty sizable part of me, on the inside that has an incredibly macabre and dark sense of humor. And so I find things funny that some people don't. And that's, I don't know if that's a character flaw or just a coping mechanism, but I'm going to read you this next article, and it's from the Daily Star. And after having seen this, because there's a lot of things on this thing that say distressing content and whatever, but here's the header is, monkeys forced to ride dogs and motorbikes in sickening torture island circus. And this article is by Dimitris Quimsidis, who I think is Greek, along with Matthew Dresch, who is a news reporter. And, okay. As a guy that I consider myself a fairly good judge of dog behavior. And if you were to ask me my opinion of how things are going from the dog's perspective, I'd say these dogs are having a fucking hell of a time. But anyway, monkeys are forced to ride dogs and motorbikes in a twisted resort filled with sickening stunts. The sickening spectacle called Monkey Island is off the coast of Nha Trang in Vietnam, and sees other animals such as bears paraded in front of tourist crowds. Animal welfare charity Animals Asia branded the resort horrific, while a tourist who witnessed the disturbing show renamed the Vietnamese destination Torture Island. David Neal, 49, animal welfare director at Animals Asia, told the Daily Mirror that monkeys ride tiny motorbikes around a track. They are put on the backs of dogs, and the dogs are raced. They also get the monkeys to race in a swimming pool. They put food at one end, and these monkeys swim across. Monkeys are also made to race for food. Bears are also used in this display for performances. They ride motorbikes and normal bicycles. I've been to the resort a few times. It's horrific. It's an abusive place. You can see the animals are fearful of the trainers in the arenas. They are brandishing sticks. We know they hit them in training. As you see the reaction in the animals, they give the animals threatening looks and show them the stick. From a young age, they've been intimidated by trainers to perform these tricks. To get them to sit on a motorbike must take quite a lot of domination. Eventually, they do it as if they've known how to. They know they'll receive some physical punishment for not doing it in the past. It's the pictures. The pictures of these displays that kind of, yeah, you know, I do see this monkey looking like he's not very happy to be on that back of that motorbike. To stay up to date with all the latest news, make sure you sign up. No, I'm not going to sign up for this. This is ridiculous. But anyway, the 49-year-old from Coventry said the circus on Monkey Island is free of charge to visitors. People don't pay to watch the circus. They pay to stand on the island, and these shows happen around them. We've reached out to the owner, Long Fu Corporation, to talk about the circus, as we can offer homes to some of the animals. They are just using it as something to attract people to the island. We haven't had any response back so far. Dave said he went behind the circus stage after one show and found the animals held in cramped cages. Oh, it's disgusting. It's terrible. That was terrible. That is terrible. That was difficult to deal with. They are in the situation 23 out of the 24 hours a day. He slammed the circus as a stain on the island for which is known as Golden Beaches and Wild Monkeys. Visitors have left positive reviews about the island online, celebrating its beauty, with some even saying they enjoyed the twisted circus shows. Others, however, condemn the abuse, with one writing, "Trip is appropriate only for people that do not feel empathy for animals. It is essentially a torture island circus." The second said, "I am still haunted by what I saw here, blatant animal cruelty." The free-roaming monkeys seem okay, but they are putting on animal shows, races where the petrified animals are basically being hit to perform. I walked off in the end as I couldn't watch after they made a traumatized, dressed-up bear ride a motorbike. Apparently, you know, after seeing some of this stuff, it is, you know, again, I have a macabre sense of humor. And you do see, it in some of the videos and whatnot, you can see that the dogs look like they're having a blast. Because dogs will, you know, if you're running a track, dogs will love that. You know, if they got something on its back, that might be a little bit different. But from my perspective, I look at it from this point of view. People evolve at different speeds in this world. They do. Societies evolve at different speeds in this world. And being Western cultured, living in the first world, I cannot sit there and look at another culture and judge them for what they do by their standards. I can only judge them by my own. Now, this is where this moral relativism starts to kick in, and some people will excuse these things because, you know, hey, it's their culture. Well, the human race, by and large, has mistreated animals forever. And I think that largely comes from the fact that for, I don't know, the first probably 10,000 years, we had to compete with them directly for food. I'm not going to put too fine a point on it. I mean, this is it. You know, we had to fight bears and dinosaurs and, you know, saber-toothed tigers, the dire wolf, troglodytes, Dracula. We had to fight everybody, you know, for food. And during the Pleistocene era, we fought mammoths and killed them and ate them. And, you know, buffalo, you name it. You know, whatever couldn't really fight back, that's what we went after. We ate. Now, given the fact that bears and lions and, you know, anything from the cat, dog, you know, genus, because cats and dogs, wolves, bears, mountain lions, those all share a common ancestor somewhere down their way. I don't know if it was a Rumvirax or whoever, but it was one of these large, formidable creatures that was part of the megafauna, mega predators line. And believe me when I tell you this, it took a lot of humans to take one of these things down. I'm not kidding. It's like, you know, our ancestors were pretty, you know, it took a team effort to take down a mammoth. It was a team effort to kill a mastodon. It was a team effort to fight off a pack of saber-toothed tigers if they roamed in packs. Dire wolves, I'm sure, probably roamed in packs. Even raccoons back during that time were monstrous. Beavers could bite a man in half. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. This isn't a joke. There are beavers that were like 6 feet tall during the in the megafauna era. So, you know, all jokes aside, you know, human beings, we've had to put the animal world in check. But it's only recently, in the last couple hundred years, that, you know, we started to judge ourselves by the company we keep and how we treat animals. I remember going to the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus in the early 90s with a couple of friends, and I remember watching the elephants and feeling just absolutely terrible for them, because you could see it in their eyes. They weren't there enjoying what they were doing. Hang on a second. I have to move my chair. I cannot wait to get the new setup done downstairs, because at least I won't have that to deal with. But yeah, I mean, I've seen animals at the zoo that I knew were not happy. There was a polar bear that passed away finally here at the Como Zoo, and he was unhappy. And all he did was swim in this repetitive fashion, and he never went to any of the other parts of his little enclosure. He just did this one thing back and forth. And all I could do was just feel terrible for him, you know? And I've said that about a lot of animals. Some animals are just not meant to be caged. There was a fat tiger that passed away that we had over here for a long time. And that tiger was fat. And he just, like, you know, got apathetic. And, you know, it's like a lot of these animals, they become domesticated and then they, you know, they lose that spirit that made them what they were. And so for me, I view the animal kingdom as like, you know, maybe we should do a little bit more to protect them. Not just from, you know, the world, but from people. You know, people are assholes. You know, and that's the saddest part about all of it, is that, you know, the more you think about it, you know, there are some folks that just see animals as being, you know, just animals. They don't see any intelligence behind them. I was at the Como in their arboretum, and they've got these water pathways with koi in them, and I had I saw this fish, a little yellow koi, playing in the water jets. He would sit there and jump over the thing and down and around, and he'd come back around and jump over it again, and he was just having fun, you know, like he was, you know, an enthusiastic child. And the other fish were just kind of like, you know, all swimming wherever the humans were because they thought they were going to get fed. But this one fish was a little different, you know. And that made me think, there's something here. Yeah, there's an intelligence behind this one little fish compared to the rest of them. And then I started to anthropomorphize like I always do. And for a long time, fish was not on the menu. But I digress. This was a pretty sad story, but not as sad as the one I'm about ready to read you. And, I mean, this story is a tragedy on a lot of levels, and I'm gonna read it, and God, please don't laugh. I mean, you can. It's okay. I won't hear you if you laugh. And I know that when I read the article the first time, I had a hard time, you know, stifling my laughter. Because, you know, it's always funnier when it's somebody else. But this is an actual human tragedy. And this comes out of DNYUZ.com. Headline is, "This man married a fictional character and he'd like you to hear him out." And like most things that start off pretty weird, it's in Japan, of course. And it's in Tokyo. In almost every way, Akihiko Kondo is an ordinary Japanese man. No, he's not. Just gonna stop right there. No, he's not. He's pleasant and easy to talk to. He has friends and a steady job and wears a suit and tie to work. There's just one exception. Mr. Kondo is married to a fictional character. Oh boy. Must not make jokes. Shit, I'm not gonna get through this. Oh, gotta take a breath here. His beloved Hatsune Miku is a turquoise haired computer synthesized pop singer who has toured with the likes of Lady Gaga and starred in video games, and after a decade long relationship, one that Mr. Kondo says pulled him out of a deep depression, he held a small unofficial wedding ceremony in Tokyo in 2018. Miku, in the form of a plush doll, wore white, and he was in a matching tuxedo. And Miku... gotta breathe. Mr. Kondo has found love, inspiration, and solace, he says. He and his assortment of God, please forgive me for laughing at this poor, tragic human being. I swear I'm trying my best not to laugh. I really am, and it is so hard. Okay. Oh my God. Okay. Oh God, I'd almost take a break, but if I do this, I'm not coming back to this, so I'm going to struggle my way through this. He and... Okay. I'm going to do this. I am going to do this. If I could just... I swear to God, it's not warm in here, and oh my God. Okay, I think I can get through this. He and his... Okay. I may actually have to edit some of this because I can't stop fucking laughing. He and his assortment of Miku dolls eat, sleep, and watch movies together. Sometimes they sneak on... Sometimes they sneak off on romantic getaways, posting photos on Instagram. Oh, I think my eye finally quit hurting now that it's properly leaking from laughing. Mr. Kondo, 38, knows that people think it's... Mr. Kondo, 38, knows that people think it's strange, even harmful. He knows that some, possibly even reading this article, hope he'll grow out of it. And yes, he knows that Miku isn't real. But his feelings for her are, he says. When we're together, she makes me smile, he said in a recent interview. And in that sense, she's real. Mr. Kondo is one of thousands of people in Japan who have entered into unofficial marriages with fictional characters in recent decades, served by a vast industry aimed at satisfying the every whim of a fervent fan culture. Tens of thousands more around the globe have joined online groups where they discuss their commitment to characters from anime, manga, and video games. For some, the relationships are just a laugh. Mr. Kondo, however, has long known that he didn't want a human partner. Partly, it was because he rejected the rigid expectations of Japanese family life, but mostly it was because he had always felt an intense and even to himself inexplicable attraction to fictional characters. Accepting his feelings was hard at first, but life with Miku, he argues, has advantages over being with a human partner. She's always there for him, she'll never betray him, and he'll never have to see her get ill or die. Wow. Mr. Kondo sees himself as part of a growing movement of those people who identify as fictosexuals. That's partly... That's partly what has motivated him to publicize his wedding, to sit for awkward interviews with news media around the globe. He wants the world to know that people like him are out there, with advances in artificial intelligence and robotics allowing more profound interactions with the inanimate, that their numbers are more likely to increase. This is not a political movement, he said, but a plea to be seen. It's about respecting other people's lifestyles. Pretend people, true feelings. It's not unusual for a work of art to provoke real emotions, anger, sorrow, joy, and the phenomena of desiring the fictional is not unique to Japan. Must not make tentacle jokes. But the idea that fictional characters can inspire real affection or even love may well have reached its highest expression in modern Japan, where the sentiment has given rise to a highly visible subculture and has become the basis for a thriving industry. The Japanese word for feelings those characters inspire is mo, or moe, moe, mo, M-O-E, that's the anglicized spelling, a term that has become shorthand for just about anything that is viscerally adorable. Business seminars have talked about tapping the mo market, and the government has promoted the notion in relation to cartoons as an important cultural export. The word and other specialized terms have resonated beyond Japan, with fictosexuals abroad often adopting them to articulate their own experience of love. While unofficially marrying fictional characters remains rare, the economic juggernaut that has grown around Japanese fan culture since about the late 1970s has made it possible for many more people to live out elaborate fantasies with their favorite characters. You have the comics, the cartoons, the games, kind of building up a sort of infrastructure where characters become more important to people, said Patrick Galbraith, an associate professor at the School of International Communication at Senshu University in Tokyo, who has written extensively about the subject. In Tokyo, two districts have become meccas for fulfilling characters or character-based dreams. Akihabara and Ikebukuro for women. Specialty shops in the neighborhoods are packed with merchandise for characters from popular games and anime. The products for women are especially extensive. Fans can buy love letters from their crushes, reproductions of their clothes, and even scents meant to evoke their presence. Hotels offer special packages featuring spa treatments and elaborate meals for people celebrating their favorite character's birthday. And on social media, people post photos, art, and mash notes promoting their oshi, a term widely used by Japanese fans to describe the objects of their affection. Oshi. For some, the relationships represent a rejection of the entrenched breadwinner housewife model of marriage in Japan, said Agnes Guillard, a researcher at the University of Paris Nanterre, who has extensively studied fictional marriages. Wow. Well, France is known for a lot of fiction, especially when it came to their recent presidential election. I'm sure that everyone is feeling like that's, you know, 2020 redo, only French, you know. But I'm not going to go political today. To the general public, it seems indeed foolish to spend money, time, and energy on someone who is not even alive, said Dr. Giard. But for character lovers, this practice is seen as essential. It makes them feel alive, happy, useful, and part of a movement with higher goals in life. Rather than becoming more isolated as a result of their relationships, women benefit from the elaborate communities that develop around them. Dr. Giard said in her experience, women see the fictional marriages as empowering, a way to challenge gender, matrimonial, and even societal norms. In some respects, Mr. Kondo's commitment to Miku, too, is an example of commercial and social forces at work. Although Miku is often portrayed as a single character, she's actually a piece of software, a digital singer in a box that comes paired with a cartoon avatar that has appeared in concert in hologram form. Mr. Kondo first found comfort in Miku in 2008 after bullying at his job sent him into a spiral of depression. He decided long ago that he would never love a real person, partly because, like many young people, he'd been rejected by a series of crushes, and partly because he didn't want the life that Japanese society demanded of him. Soon, Mr. Kondo began making songs with Miku, purchased a stuffed doll of the character online, and made a breakthrough in the relationship came nearly a decade later with the introduction in 2017 of a $1,300 machine called Gatebox. The size of a table lamp, the device allowed its owners to interact with one of a variety of fictional characters represented through a small hologram. If you've not seen Archer, and you don't know who the character Krieger is, you might want to look, because this is starting to be art and life commingling. Anyway, if you haven't seen Blade Runner 2049, the Joy character, this is it. Gatebox was marketed to lonely. Imagine that. Gatebox was marketed to lonely young men. In one ad, a shy office worker sends a note to his virtual wife, letting her know that he'll be late. Upon his arrival, she reminds him that it's their three-month anniversary, and they share a champagne toast. As part of its promotional campaign, Gatebox's maker set up an office where users could apply for unofficial marriage certificates, and thousands of people registered. Mr. Kondo was delighted that Miku was among the Gatebox characters and excited to at last hear her thoughts on their relationship. In 2018, he proposed to Miku's flickering avatar, "Please treat me well," she replied. He invited his co-workers and his family to the wedding. They all refused to come, and that is tragic. That right there it's just trash. I mean, I could cry if I hadn't already had tears filling my eyes from laughter. I'm a terrible human being. And this is the thing, is that I can empathize with this guy because, you know, I know what it was like to be awkward and weird as a kid growing up. And it doesn't change anything, you know, once you get to a certain age. You know, people just know you as that weirdo. But I've come to be empowered by that. And you know, and this is fine because, you know, at least I don't have a gay box in my house, thank God. I've got an Xbox that I play video games on, but I don't need that sort of, you know. I have pets, and no, it's just weird. But anyway, yeah. So anyway, in the end, 39 people that he knew, largely strangers and online friends, they attended. His local member of parliament was there, and a woman he had never met helped him with the arrangements. Some Japanese commentator denounced Mr. Kondo as weird. Wow, what were the odds? Others pleaded for sympathy. One man contended that the union was a violation of the Japanese Constitution, which states that marriage should only be allowed with the consent of both sexes. In response, Mr. Kondo posted a video of his proposal. If you ask me if I'm happy, I'm happy. In the years since his story went viral, hundreds of people from around the world have turned to Mr. Kondo for advice, support, and reassurance. Among them was Yasuaki Watanabe, who opened a small business registering fictional marriages after seeing the popularity of Gatebox's short-lived certificate service. Over the last year, Mr. Watanabe has counseled hundreds of fictosexuals and issued around 100 marriage certificates, including one for himself and Hibiki Tachibana, a character from the anime series Symphogear. Huh, never heard of that one before. Mr. Watanabe, who likes to travel and has an active social life, began watching the show only at a friend's insistence, and when he saw Hibiki, it was true love, he said. This was not his first marriage. He had divorced a woman several years earlier. His new relationship was easier, he said, with no demands on his time and no need to cater to someone else's desires. The love was pure, given freely, and with no expectation of anything in return. It made him realize how self-centered he had been in the earlier marriage. No, it didn't. No, it didn't, because, see, this is that lack of self-awareness that seems to be permeating a lot of our male culture and counterparts, is that you learn by mistakes. You don't learn and then go, well, this is just me. You'll just have to put up with it. How about being the change that you want to see in the world and not be a selfish prick? But I digress. If you ask me, I'm happy. I'm happy. He said, of course, there are tough parts. He added, he misses being touched. And there's the problem of copyright, which has prevented him from making a life-size doll of the character. But the love is real. Kina Horikawa, a 23-year-old woman with a chirpy, outgoing personality and a goth-punk aesthetic, moved in with her parents during the pandemic, freeing up cash from her job at a call center to spend time on Kunihiro Horikawa, a character from the mobile game Tuken Ranbu. She had a real boyfriend, but broke up with him because he became jealous. Her fictional husband is the teenage personification of a 400-year-old wakizashi, or Japanese short sword, and he joins the family for dinner most nights in the form of a tiny acrylic portrait perched next to her rice bowl. The couple double dates with friends who have their own fictional beaus, going out to high teas and posting photos on Instagram. I'm not hiding it from anyone, Miss Horikawa says, who uses her fictional husband's last name unofficially. While Mr. Kondo's relationship with Miku is still not accepted by his family, it has opened other doors for him. In 2019, he was invited to join a symposium at Kyoto University to speak about his relationship. He traveled there with a life-size doll of Miku he had commissioned. And there is a photo of this doll. I don't know what it's made out of. But it is, I mean, it's beautifully crafted, I think. I just don't want to think about it that far. Engaging in deep conversation about the nature of fictional relationships made him think he might like to go to college. He's now studying minority rights in law school, where on leave from his job as an administrator at an elementary school. Oh, well. As with any marriage, there have been challenges. The hardest moment came during the pandemic when Gatebox announced it was discontinuing service for Miku. On the day the company turned her off, Mr. Kondo said goodbye for the last time, left for work. When he went home that night, Miku's image had been replaced by the words, "network error." Someday he hopes they will be reunited. Maybe she'll take on new life as an android, or they will meet in the metaverse. Either way, Mr. Kondo said he plans to be faithful to her until he dies. Apparently this was also in the New York Times, this article. So, this is a story of human tragedy. A man who was bullied so badly that he ceased to be the person that he was and found solace in cartoons. And as much as I could literally go on for an hour just making jokes, I can't. And the reason why I can't is because I'm a compassionate human being, and I realize that at any point along my evolution as a human being, this could have been me. Yeah. I mean, if you'd have talked to me in like third grade. Oh, yeah, this definitely could have been me, because most of my friends were imaginary. And as an adult, I mean, a few things have changed. I've got a lot of friends, but some of them are still pretty imaginary. I mean, they do write and text from time to time, but most are ghosts. You know, they ghost, and then they return, and then they disappear again. So, I mean, I can make a lot of jokes about this stuff, but truthfully, this is one of the biggest horror stories I've seen today. And it's likely due to the fact that on a visceral level, this is how this man has dealt with a terrible loneliness. And the one thing about Japan, and I know this not because I've been there, but because I had contemplated going there. I actually almost took a job there. But it's a crowded city. It is so incredibly crowded. And people, you know, they're nice, they're polite. And there's nothing wrong with the Japanese culture at all. But the thing of it is that their social structure is such that you can become incredibly lonely. And then the bullying, I knew there was a lot of that kind of shit here in America, but I just never really thought Japanese culture really was like that. I know that people were bullies, and there's always bullies somewhere, but to bully somebody in their job, that takes a special breed of asshole. Maybe he wasn't a drinker. You know, apparently that culture is like, a lot of guys die from cancer over there, from the sheer amount of alcohol. Liver cancer is like the number two killer over there. That and heart attacks from alcohol poisoning. Anyway, it's just a horrible little thing to read about this poor lonely guy. It's almost as bad as the motorcycles and the monkeys. I just feel bad for him. I really do. But I guess, yeah, I still got some time. So apparently in Turkey, this is from the Jerusalem Post. Archaeological dig in Turkey uncovers massive underground city, and apparently they estimate between 60 and 70,000 people could have lived in this place. And it's under the Midyat district I guess, in Mardin, Turkey. But apparently, here's the thing about these underground cities, there's a lot of them. Especially in Tunisia and all over the place. There are these underground cities all over the place. Even Italy has them. And I believe these things are probably a lot older than they pretend they are. But once, you know, once these things, I mean, we've got underground facilities here in the United States, too. But I just, reading about this article, all it does is just make me believe that at one point, human beings had to go underground to survive. Probably a great cataclysm. I wouldn't say a flood, but I would definitely say something that was pretty awful. And I think I'm going to leave you guys on a what the F note. This is from the Daily Star, UK, which is nothing short of sensational journalism, which is one of my favorites. Hadron Super Collider, switch to, they're going to turn it on to open a portal and fulfill the biblical prophecy. There's a theory going around, Hadron Super Collider is going to be used to open a gateway to hell. Video shared on TikTok by user Gabe Sager claims the Large Hadron Collider will open a portal to hell when it's turned back on for the first time in 3 years. A wild conspiracy theory circulating on TikTok claims the Hadron Super Collider will open a portal to hell as part of a more sinister agenda. The world's most powerful particle accelerator is about to turn back on after a three-year hiatus between... They're going to do it between the 20... Holy shit, that's... Well, that was yesterday. They were going to turn it on between the 22nd and the 24th for a third and more powerful operation. And my first thought was, why on earth would they open a portal to St. Paul? For fuck's sake, they can just fly here. They don't need to open up a Hadron Super Collider portal. You can literally get on a plane and fly to Minneapolis and rent a taxi and then come to St. Paul. It's not that hard. Why go through the... Oh, wait, they mean the actual, not just metaphorical hell, but they're talking about the real thing with demons and everything. So anyway, the... crazy theories have long followed the experiment as scientists preparing for the switch on received death threats from critics, aka crazies, who fear it could destroy the Earth. These threatening emails and worried phone calls from members of the public who fear it could open up a devastating black hole, quantum singularity. But according to a video shared on TikTok by user Gabe Sager, G-A-B-E-S-E-G-U-R, gonna give him a shout out. The experiment is part of a huge Hollywood demonic agenda that will open a portal to hell. The unnamed theorist explained. Oh boy. CERN are expecting to find other dimensions and open portals to these dimensions. If you have the image of Stargate in your head right now, you're spot on. That's what I said. One of Stern's goals is to recreate. One of CERN's goals, probably, is to recreate. Take a flatter. Oh my God. Who writes this stuff? Because here's the thing, is that I'm a fairly learned guy, but I can't make sense of what this guy is actually writing. Fuck, now they've got me doing it. Let's try this again. One of CERN's goals is to recreate and create an open, and basically it's going to reopen a portal. There's something about taking a flatter according to marker and reopen a portal. I don't know what that's even about. But if their agenda is unrelated to Bible prophecy entirely, then what is it with all this mystical symbolism that they are knowingly are associating themselves with? There's a significant section of CERN that is built upon the St. Genis Powell, which is a commune in the Department of France. Here's the thing, is that whoever is writing this stuff and whoever is saying this stuff obviously has got some problems. In Roman times, the St. Genis Pauli Piali was called Apollocom, but the town and the temple were dedicated there in ancient times to Apollo on the destroyer. Jesus H. Christ, learn how to write. To Apollo, the destroyer, the sheep, a horse, if you will. Apollo is the angel of the bottomless pit, referred to in Revelation 9:11. No, you know what? This is retarded. You know what? The only thing that's going to happen at CERN right now is we're going to see probably one hell of a lot of electricity being used to smash something. And since CERN is not in the United States, thankfully it's going to be probably powered by Russian utility companies. Because if you take a look at this article, you know for a fact whoever wrote this or whoever is speaking this nonsense is a little unhinged. And that's the problem about the world in that context, is that we've got a lot of crazy people that are running the show. And that is the great human tragedy that is today's news. I don't even know why I read all that stuff to you guys. Mostly because I think that if when I pare it all away, there's a certain amount of Schadenfreudism that I took from this. You see, in the first story about the otter and the dog, I could identify with that because I have a dog that will bring me things. And my dog is, he's got a good heart. He's got a kind heart. I can identify with that. Yeah. And so, the other human tragedy stuff, though, it is what it is. You know, it's the monkeys and all that other stuff, and that's a little bit of human decency. You gotta take a look at that little news story about the monkeys being tortured on that island, along with some bears and stuff. You have to look at the way human beings treat animals. They also treat each other the same way, and it's very sad. And then, of course, you know, me going on and openly mocking this poor Japanese gentleman. And I am truly sorry that I sound like a terrible human being, but for fuck's sake, you cannot deny there are some problems that we see in our daily culture, especially on the internet, with people just like that guy and others, you know. And then, you know, I guess the whole point of tonight's show was to give you the hope that if none of that shit applies to you, then your life is probably pretty good. If you're not worrying about things of no consequence or having sex with a rubber doll, I guess you're probably doing okay in life, you know? I mean, I'm not going to judge people for what they do in the proper, you know, context or the privacy of their home. What life choices people make, you know, that's not my business. It's when they start pretending like it's normal. That's kind of where my disconnect starts, you know. And I guess maybe that one with the imaginary friends and all that other stuff, I guess that kind of hit a little close to home because I didn't have any friends growing up and I felt bad for that guy. And I think that maybe, just maybe, if he got out more or maybe could overcome his broken heart or maybe took some self-defense classes and beat up those bullies that turned him into what he was, he'd probably be okay. It's not like they don't teach karate in Japan or something. I don't want to throw that out there and have it be patently obvious, but isn't that where self-defense and martial arts kind of comes from, is karate? Isn't that from like Japan? I don't want to sound like an idiot here, but I think that they teach that there. But anyway, there's always going to be a crazy person in the woodpile, though, at the end of everything, screeching to the high heavens about how human beings are going to destroy the world in our mad pursuit to know the known universe. And I'll be honest with you, after seeing how much went into building that Hadron Super Collider, from my perspective, if you cannot take that piece of technology that you spent decades building and all the resources and all the money that it took to create it, and the best that you can do is open a gateway to hell and you can't give us free energy, you're wasting a lot of fucking people's time here. About 8 billion people's time on this planet with your experiments. Just saying, you know, we have enough hell on Earth right now. We don't need any more. We're full up. But that will be the last that I say about that. And if you noticed, I didn't make up anything here. I'm as good as my word. I won't be screaming sensational things about how I've had to beat up space aliens or fight my way through a curtain of ghosts to get to the show, because none of that actually happened. But I mean, the articles, those were real. But for me to make fun of other people and pretend like there's an imminent crisis of doom, or, you know, I'm doing more than the minimum to produce the show, I'm not doing that. And I'm going to see if my listenership actually goes up. I got a game plan, though. If I can hit 1,000 listeners, like 1,000 dedicated listeners, I'm going to start giving away some t-shirts and some other stuff. But seeing as how that I'm at 16 right now, I don't think that I'm in any danger of giving away 100 t-shirts. So at any rate, folks, I hope you have a fantastic Monday. And like I said before, as long as you're not getting bullied at your job on a Monday morning and, you know, having sex with a rubber doll as a result, I'd say your job and your life are probably okay. So I hope that you enjoy whatever your Monday brings you. Take care. Good night.